Welcome to Disinformation Wars, a project of the American Foreign Policy Council. I'm AFPC Senior Vice President Ilan Berman. Disinformation Wars is a series of conversations with officials, experts, and practitioners designed to take you behind the scenes of the struggle for hearts and minds of global publics that's now taking place around the world. It's a contest being waged by Russia, China, Iran, and other actors, and the stakes could not be any higher. On October 12th, the Wall Street Journal published a remarkable article by Hossein Ronaghi, an Iranian opposition activist. In it, Ronaghi leveled a sensational charge at Western media that it is failing the Iranian people. There have been 5 nationwide uprisings against the regime in our country in the past 4 years, Ronaghi wrote. Our government has slaughtered protesters and tortured political prisoners to suppress them. Yet most people in the West, even those who consider themselves informed on Iran, don't know our reality because foreign media coverage consistently overlooks or denies our reality. For us, it is as if there are 2 Irans, the one where we live and another that you read about. Your Iran is defined by a pesky nuclear negotiation. Ours is much worse. It is a religious police state where we live in fear, with countless red lines that most dare not cross. It is a country of repression, censorship, and violence. The disconnect, Ronaghi describes, is a glaring one, in which a pitched fight for freedom is taking place that is being ignored by Western media. How real is this disparity? What are we missing about the Iranian story, and why? And how do we bridge this divide? To get the answers, I turn to one of the country's leading Iran experts, Jason Brodsky. Jason is policy director at United Against Nuclear Iran, UANI, a prominent advocacy group, to which he returned this fall after a stint as Middle East analyst and editor at Iran International, a leading Iranian opposition media channel. Jason holds degrees from Brandeis University and the University of Miami Law School, and has worked at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. There are few people who watch Iranian politics more closely or understand its dynamics better than Jason does. Jason, it's great to have you with us.
It's great to be with you. Thanks, Ilan.
All right, let's talk first about that op-ed and what it tells us exactly about Iran. The picture that Ronaghi paints is a damning one, in which Western media outlets willfully ignore the political ferment that's taking place within Iran. Is it accurate in your estimation? Is the West missing the big stories that are taking place within the country?
That's a great question. I thought that Hossein's op-ed was brave and powerful, really. Here is a cry from inside Iran to Western media and also Western policymakers, I would say, that you're ignoring us. You're ignoring our stories. You're ignoring our lived experience. And it shows at the end of the day that Iran is not just a nuclear file. And those who think that the US can put Iran's nuclear program back in a box, the JCPOA box that's already started to expire, and then pivot to China, climate change, domestic issues, I think have a very unrealistic view of the situation over there and are living really in a fantasy land, because there are sunsets under the nuclear deal that are coming soon to a theater near you, really, with 2023 and the limitations on Iran's ballistic missile program expiring. We have human rights situation in Iran, which is atrocious. We have US hostages, European hostages who are still in the country. That's not to mention that Iran will continue to challenge US interests and values in the region itself with its support for terrorism, its meddling in the region. So the Iran file is not going away. And I think Hossein's piece was a wake-up call to the West that it needs a more comprehensive approach to the Islamic Republic. I'll give you an example. Consider that the European Union imposed its first human rights-related sanctions on the Islamic Republic in 2021, and that was the first time since 2013 that there had been human rights-related sanctions imposed by the EU on Iran. The UK hasn't even done so since 2013. So I think that that's an unacceptable state of play. And this is one of the reasons why Hossein and so many others have this resentment and feeling that you're not listening to us. You're not supporting us. You're chasing after Iranian diplomats in Vienna and Brussels, but you're not chasing after our stories. And I think that that's really a tragedy. And on your other question on the big issues that I think that the West isn't covering or, you know, is getting wrong in terms of not covering extensively succession in the Islamic Republic. This is the really important question that's going to be playing out in the years ahead. It's already been playing out with the elevation of Ibrahim Raisi as president. Ayatollah Khamenei elevated him as president because he wants to ensure that someone is in that seat who he trusts, who will be able to preserve his legacy and his equities upon his demise. This is not to say that it's guaranteed that Raisi will be the next supreme leader. He might face some competition from others in the system. And as you know, the Iranian presidency absorbs all of the accountability in the system. And it remains to be seen whether Raisi will have that experience. So what happens around issues of succession are important, and I think motivates the regime decision-making in recent months as it relates to a wide range of issues, nuclear and non-nuclear. So that's going to be important. And that's a story that the West isn't covering as much that it should. I would also say that where it gets a lot of the focus wrong is the focus on who is the president of the Islamic Republic. There's a lot that's made over, well, this is Rouhani's policy. It was Rouhani because he was considered more, quote, moderate, that the nuclear deal was even possible. But they failed to appreciate that the back channel started under the Ahmadinejad era. And the president, it's not the president's foreign policy. It's not Rouhani's foreign policy. It's not Raisi's foreign policy. It's Khamenei's foreign policy. And he plays a long game. He's been in this chair since 1989. He's outlasted multiple U.S. presidents since George H.W. Bush. He knows all of the moves of the United States. And he is the one who is making the decisions. And I think that the West fails to appreciate that he's been very transparent on what his strategy is. And it hasn't changed since Raisi has become president. Khamenei in December was already setting the stage for the escalation in Iran's nuclear program that we're seeing today. In March, before even Ibrahim Raisi even announced his presidency or presidential candidacy, we had Khamenei saying that we are going to move slowly. He thought that it was a mistake for the regime to rush into the 2015 nuclear deal, and we're in no rush now. Fast forward to October 2021, we're seeing that play out right now. So again, this is all Khamenei and focusing on Raisi versus Rouhani, Hossein Amir Abdullahian is not the story. The story is Khamenei and his speeches and his calculations. So that's what I would say on that front. And I would also say another thing that we're getting wrong is this false choice that, you know, everything the US does risks war if we're not making concessions to the Islamic Republic, or there's a false choice between the nuclear deal and war that has played out. And that's been proven wrong time and again. The US withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. We heard from the usual suspects World War III was going to break out. Did it happen? No. The US designated the IRGC as a foreign terrorist organization. I heard some people arguing that, oh, this is going to increase escalation, chances of war. Did war break out? No. Did Qasem Soleimani was assassinated? Did war break out? No. So, and this plays into the regime's playbook by this narrative that everything the US has to be so careful with everything it does with the Islamic Republic, because war is going to break out the next day. And I think that that's a really unfortunate narrative that serves the regime's interests. One other point that I would make, and I think is important for your listeners, is that there's this view among some in the United States, especially among the progressive community, it's because the U.S. withdrew from the nuclear deal is the reason that Ibrahim Raisi is president today. That couldn't be more wrong. Iran has a supreme leader, and it has a Guardian Council, and the secretary of the Guardian Council has been in his chair since the 1980s. He is in the position that matters, and he gets his orders from Iran's supreme leader. They are the ones who make the calculations on who runs for re-election. And we saw that with Ali Larijani's disqualification. So it has really less to do with Iran, with what the US did or didn't do with the nuclear deal. And it has more to do with succession.
Let me try to unpack this a little bit, because you touched on a lot of issues from regime succession to where the real power lies in the Iranian system, which is enormously competitive, but the real decision-making power resides squarely in the seat of the Supreme Leader. So why do you think the West in general, but Western media in particular, gets Iran so wrong? Is it just a question of political bias? Is it a lack of access? Do we simply not have good eyes on the target set, so to speak? Do we not really understand Iran, or is it something else entirely?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a combination of factors, really. I think Iranian officials and those who have access to them in the West often paint a portrait of internal Iranian politics that plays to the regime's strength in controlling the narrative and how the international community perceives the regime. That this was really driven home by Iran's longtime foreign minister, Javad Zarif, who had an uncanny ability to be able to work the US media and the Washington as well, because he developed, let's understand, he developed relationships with members of Congress as well. And he was able to portray Iran and its politics as a contest between reformers versus hardliners. And if only we empower the reformists, only then will there be a chance of moderating the most egregious aspects of Iranian behavior. But what Tehran has proven over the last several years is that reform isn't possible under this regime. Nuclear deal or no nuclear deal. And I think the Iranian people, like Hossein, understand this dynamic. And that's why they are increasingly taking to the airwaves and chanting their frustration at some of the misunderstandings of the West as it relates to the Islamic Republic. They understand this dynamic better than anyone. And we heard this in the protests in Iran recently, where they were protesting against reformists and hardliners, because the Iranian people know that they're two sides of the same corrupt, unreformable coin. And so that's really important, I think, for your listeners to take away.
Okay, so if traditional media sources aren't getting the job done here, if they're not telling the proper stories, are others? What's the role of opposition channels? How are they filling the gap in telling this story?
I think Iranian opposition sources or media are playing a critical role, because what they're doing is they are elevating a ground truth that sometimes major outlets don't have access to. They're showcasing videos and imagery and stories and sources and narratives. And a lot of times you see that these stories, videos gradually get picked up by major outlets, wire services, major papers in the United States. And that's a really important role for the opposition media to bring a ground truth reality to some of the coverage. I would also say one thing, and in terms of along these lines, and I think that it relates to something you mentioned before. You know, a lot of the Western press follows the lead of the governments that they're living in terms of their focus on Iran, which has been squarely and solely on the nuclear file. And that's why, unfortunately, a lot of these other issues get drowned out by the constant, never-ending drama of the Iranian nuclear negotiations. And so unless and until governments take a more comprehensive approach to the Islamic Republic, I think, unfortunately, the media is going to be focused on those issues that the governments are focused on, but not necessarily these other very important issues that the Iranian people are focused on.
Right. And you worked at one of these channels. You worked at Iran International. Can you talk a little bit about the big stories as you saw them from that vantage point? What were the things that you and your colleagues thought were most important to report on? And how are those things different from what you saw being related and reported on in the mainstream media when they turned their attention to Iran?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we were focused on internal Iranian politics to kind of shine a spotlight on how the Iranian system works. And I'll give you one example, one story that was very important during my time at Iran International was the publication of the leaked audio interview featuring now former Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif. His revelations on that tape, while it really wasn't a surprise to many of us who follow Iran very closely, it was a surprise, and it created a real firestorm in the West that, you know, wait a second, Javad Zarif doesn't have actual power in the Islamic Republic. This is what many of us have been arguing, but it seemed to come as a surprise to those who cover Iran and at some vantage point. And there was some resentment as well when there was some publication of his audio file, because they're used to Javad Zarif controlling the narrative and viewing Iran through the lens that he presents and his allies present as well. And his revelation that, well, really, it's the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps that's running the show in the region. I have very little influence. And, you know, as one former U.S. intelligence official, Norm Rule, likes to say, Javad Zarif has been is like a fax machine. He just an executor, basically, and he's an implementer. And that's what he does. And he has very limited influence, if any, over the ultimate decision making, which is made by the Supreme Leader and the Supreme National Security Council.
All right. I want to circle back to Varnaghi's thesis that Western media can and should do more to help the fight for Iran. Do you think it can? Do you think there are things that Western media can do to amplify the trends that we're seeing on the Iranian street and really to get the word out about what's really happening?
I am of the view that until governments start focusing more comprehensively on Iran, meaning not relegating the human rights issue to kind of a third tier issue, that we're going to be in this unfortunate dynamic where we're focused solely on the nuclear file, and we're giving short shrift to a lot of these other stories. And I think that that's unfortunate, but I do sense some momentum with the Iranian diaspora media outlets in bringing these stories to the forefront and raising awareness, because this is critical in order to give a ground truth perspective for Western audiences.
Okay, and what do you think the role of the United States is here? What should it be? The United States obviously has a very large megaphone when it comes to Iran policy through outlets like the Voice of America's Persian service and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Radio Farda radio service. But these are also outlets that have been mired in considerable controversy in recent years. How are we doing in terms of outreach to the Iranian people? Is the U.S. communicating clearly to them? What should we be saying? What are we saying? What's the state of play?
I think we were doing better a year ago. Today, I feel that the messaging coming from the U.S. government has been pretty bland. It's stuck in what I like to say is this 1990s view of Iranian politics of reformism versus conservatism. And it's really not focusing on the systemic issues that relate to the system and how it's too corrupt to be reformed and too just that's not possible under the current system. So that's really the challenge here. And I feel that a lot of that has filtered down into the coverage of some of the other media outlets that you mentioned. So really ramping up those kinds of outlets will be very important in the months ahead.
Jason, thanks so much for spending the time and sharing your insights. Thank you for tuning in to Disinformation Wars. To learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council and our work on public diplomacy, visit us online at www.afpc.org. And as always, we hope you'll join us again next time.